Access number 30402, Mr. Ken Austin, Real 4. Now, you've got yourself settled in there, right. You know, with a comfortable billet, but you were working hard sense that you were training.
Then it came to a time that the regiment was going to move from Barnet Castle to Germany. Right, so that means to say that the regiment will have to pack up. So
now, what? That's a big undertaking, moving a whole armoured regiment.
So then they come down to Corporal Austin and say, we're going to move. Oh, right, sir. Now, can you make orders? Can you go round the camp and see what's got to be boxed up and what's not got to be boxed up? What's got to go in container and stuff like that? Then order all the boxes you will need to box all that box stuff up. So then I was, say, over a month boxing the regiment up to move to Germany, right?
So you'd have to prepare the boxes and everything?
All the boxes, sign them, put names and things on it, who it is, you know what it is. So that was done with me and a lieutenant. He was in charge. But he was quite good. He helped a lot. So we got that. Then we got to Germany.
When did you go to Germany? Do you know when you went?
I can't remember the date. No.
Roughly.
No, it's gone right out of my mind. I must have been so busy and that I just didn't even take.
What I mean is just to put it within the year. I mean, was it still in 48? Well, it wouldn't be 48.
No,
must 49.
Be, must be 49 time.
So. Now, so what happened? Where were you going to in Germany?
Lunenburg.
And what happened when you got there? What was your billet?
I mean, when we got there, there was no job for Ken and Corporal Austin because all of that stuff was done by Germans. And it was one of the Germans' top-ranked panzer camps. So it was really number one. It was really good camp. So what happens then? See the adjutant and say, "Oh right, you've done all these courses, you've done all that, you've Matt Reed, so you're now in the recce squadron because I've done a recce course and all."
Now,
so that was 6 Dingoes armoured cars. That means to say that the recce squadron is like when tank.
Is it a squadron or troop?
Squadron, recce squad.
Now. Tell me more about the recce course then. What would the recce course be? Because we didn't do that.
Well, the recce course is a course where they teach you to creep up to the enemy as close as you can, then wireless back to our tanks to whatever you see up where you are, so that they can either lay on them, like lay gunfire or whatever you fancy. Or you also look out for any anti-tank guns or stuff like that, or stuff like that in the woods and trees, which is a work of art to watch and look at trees and look where somebody might have put a gun and camouflage it. And then you've got to learn the difference. Right, just say something about it. Say somebody was going to lay a gun, like, say, the side of that lawn, or a ticket, right, and they're going to camouflage it. So usually they take bits of trees and stuff like that and put it around it. But then they teach you how to see the difference between a tree that's growing or a bush that's growing or grass that's growing by the way the leaves are. Because leaves have got two colours. One side's one colour and one's the other. So if it's a tree that's got a very prominent green front, it might have a white back. So if you look for something moved or something different like that, you look through binoculars and you see that the leaves or the grass is not matching the rest of the grass, like the grass might be pointing one way or the wrong way. So then you know that somebody's moved it or they're covering something behind it. So you have to learn all that stuff, how to distinguish things that's hidden, tracks, whether people are walking up grass or somewhere more times than they normally would. So you have to learn all that. That's called recce reconnaissance.
Now, when you were posed, what was the composition of the reconnaissance squad? Before we got, I mean, what was it actually made up of?
Made up of 6 Dingo armoured cars And then it changed from dingoes to Bren Gun carriers.
Now, let's look at the dingo first. What were the dingo armoured cars? What were they like?
Well, it's a small armoured car with no top. Unless you had a canvas one or a metal grill top on top. And you, is that one driver, and sometimes you had a gunner, if you had two of you.
So it's a one or two man thing?
Yeah, that's it, whatever. But mostly it was one man, unless you went on a special patrol or something to do. But then...
So what did you think of the dingo?
Fantastic little
thing. In what way?
Very fast. You could go 70 mile an hour forward and 70 mile an hour backwards. In the same, just to move a lever left or forward or backwards.
So you'd be driving these?
And you always drove at an angle. You sat like that. You sat facing it and the steering wheel was there.
Why?
Well, because of the shape of the dingo armoured car. Otherwise you couldn't have it in front of you.
And did it have any armour? I presume it next
to nothing. Oh, yeah, it would take normal bullets or stuff like that, you know. Wouldn't take nothing like a big shell or something like that. Or a landmine. I mean, so if you hit a landmine, it would either flick you over.
And what armament did it have, if it had one?
Well, it had a Bren gun, but in the career, it had a Browning 300.
But that's later.
That's later, yeah.
But your ones just had a Bren gun then at that time. Was it fixed or was it just in the back?
Well, no, you had it inside, but you can fix it. You had two things on the corner of the armour plate that you could drop it in and have it as a sort of movable.
So you like these dingo armoured cars then?
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Now, what sort of exercise? You know, when you joined the reconnaissance patrol, you were new to it, I presume, were you?
The driving part was nothing, you see, because I was good at driving anyway. So it didn't matter what vehicle it was, I could get in and drive it.
So what sort of exercises did you do? There were six of you, six armoured cars, dingoes. What would you do? I mean, what sort of exercises?
Well,
or did you not
when we was in Germany, we used to do border patrol.
Tell me about a border patrol. What were they like?
Well, that was all right, because after a while, once you got used to your area, you even got to know the Russians on the other side. You know, so you sometimes stop and have a cup of tea with them or have a chat with their towers, you know. And sometimes it's nice to have a little game of football if there's a couple of years on your side. So it never... But I found out that with Russians, like you do the train to Berlin, you know.
I'll come to that. Keep to the border patrol. Yeah.
But, I mean, say, if you showed authority, they take notice. They're not as people that depict on the telly or films, you know, but they will quieten down or take notice of you, you know, if you acted authority or knew what you were talking about, you know. So that was, I found that out very early with the border patrol.
Now, what were you meant to be doing? What were the border patrols for?
Well, the border patrol to see that we didn't go on their side and they didn't come on our side, sort of thing. So
did you just drive up alongside it, or was it with their
road? Oh, yeah, you had a route up to wherever it was or stuff like that, you know.
Did anything ever happen, or was it just...
Well, only one thing. One of our blokes took a tank and tried to sell it to them.
Tell me about that.
Well, this chap took the tank from a regiment one night and went up and tried to sell it to the Russians. We heard about it and all that, and the commanding officer said to me, "You know that border, will you go up and look for it or see something there?" And I goes up there and I sees the officer, Russian officer, and had a chat, and he said, "Yes," he said, "one of your chaps brought us a tank over."
Which tank is it?
It was a Cromwell, he said, and he wanted to sell it to us.
And what did the Russians do? They weren't interested.
Would you like it back?
So they just... Had they bought it, or they just taken it off him?
They put it just inside the boulder.
And what happened to him?
I don't know. That sort of thing you don't know.
Was he just a trooper, or was he an NCO?
No, he was a trooper.
And do you know what had made him try and do it, or was he just drunk?
No, I don't think he was drunk, but I think he was a bit touched.
So that was the only thing that really happened.
That I know of, you know.
Now, what about, you mentioned the trains to Berlin. Is that what you were on about then?
Yeah, well, you...
Did you do duty on that?
You had to do guards on that, you know.
Now, tell me about that, because that's quite a famous thing, that train. It runs through to Berlin, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
But that was the same thing, you see. That the German, like... the Russians used to be bolshy, you know. Shut the window, you mustn't look out and all that. But when you was in an NCO in charge of a party going through, you could get off and have a word. And I used to get off and I'd tell the blooming Russians to leave things and go off. But after a while, they got so used to me that they took notice of what I said and all that. And some of the blokes used to say, oh, we like going on the Russian with him because he tells the Russians to get what to do, you sort of thing. But, I mean, so it was quite...
And who'd be on the train? I mean, what was the train? Can you explain what the train was for?
Well, it used to take stuff into Berlin, you know, general supplies. I mean, so
now, this is after the Berlin airlift, so after
the Berlin, yeah. Because you still had the airlift, but then the train started, because they were still taking stuff in that wasn't food stuff and coal, like the airlift took a lot of food stuff and coal in and stuff like that.
That was still going on while you were there?
Oh, yeah.
Now, so anything else, any other duties you had, with the reconnaissance squadron?
Well, in Germany, no, all I did were like SD type, that special deliveries, you know, like our camp would get a special messages passed to us from headquarters and that. And then these documents would be put in envelopes, secret documents sort of thing. You weren't allowed to look at them. And they weren't allowed to be radioed across or anything like that, or phoned across. They had to be delivered by hand. So if there was a camp somewhere on the other side of Germany or something, you get that and you have to go at the armoured car and go to the places. Well, one time I went, one night, winter night, I got snowed into the dingo because there's no top. It was really packed. The snow was so bad. And I got to this American camp and got halted at the gate with American police. And I told them I got to have this stuff, got to give it to their agent or officer in command personally. But the thing was, I couldn't get out the dingo because I was sort of frozen in. And these two Yanks come across and got half an arm of me and tried to pull me out. And in doing so, they busted all my back muscles. So I was paralysed. But anyway, I got the thing there, got back, and reported sick. And I had a German PT instructor who was a physio. And he was the most brilliant bloke I've ever known for back, and he put me through a terrible bloody things to do, but at least it did help a lot. And he told me what to do, how to treat myself. He said, if you don't do what I tell you to do, he said, you won't walk properly for the rest of your life.
It was that bad.
Well, I done what he told me. He said the only way to do it is whenever you move about now, you move about like one of your guardsmen. He said, you keep up your head straight and keep walking straight. He said, that will gradually pull the muscles back down. And when I came to England, I went to the hospital here, and the specialist I see said to me, would you do me a favour? If I send you addresses of different hospitals, would you come to them for training young nurses, young doctors? And I used to go to these hospitals, and he used to say to them, now, see this man here, he's an ex-soldier and all this guy we've done. He said, by rights, he shouldn't be walking like he is. He used to take me clothes off, and he said, now look at his back and how he walked. And I had to check me. And this went on for about 8 or 9 weekends, different times, you know. So
it all worked then? Your back was better?
Well, it's better, but I have to be very careful what I do. I can't sort of...
Even now,
I can't snap down quick or bend, because I'll never get up for ages until I'm fit.
Now, So you're doing that. The expression. What about exercises? Did they do any sort of big? Because they have the big exercises in Germany. Were you doing any of them? Tell me about them.
Maneuvers.
Maneuvers. That's right.
Well, one of the jobs I had, the officer someone said, "Now, can you do something, Corporal?" Said, "What's that you want?" He said, "Well, I've had instruction from HQ that they want some way to split military convoys up on manoeuvres." So I said, "Right, I'll have to think about what to do." So what we have, we made ourselves in called the Tiger Squad, six of us. Now what we used to do, we had special camouflage stuff that we could fold up and fit on the side of the cars. Now, we get instructions that the Royal Air Force or the Americans or the Danish or so-and-so is going on manoeuvres. They're going to have a big convoy. Right. Now, what we used to do, I used to come along with six Dingo cars. We join the back of the convoy. Now, I used to come out first, get halfway down the convoy, pull in, then slow down. So it'd become a gap. Then gradually, a while it's back to the next boat, here come down, up off all, they're slipping behind me. So eventually we got the old six down. So there's a big gap of six dingoes and the other half of the convoy right back. So then I used to go ahead, knowing the map reference or wherever they were going, and change the signs, the road signs, or alter the road. I used to take the stuff off me dingo and make a barrier and make the roads, you've got to go that way sort of thing. See? So I had a lovely job, used to split up all the convoys, and they were all over Germany trying to find each other. And this,
and that was just generally as
this was for general manoeuvres in Germany, you know, and we got a name as the Nutty Tigers, who buggered up every convoy that used to go out. So it was an enjoyable sort of job.
Did you have any other things to do on exercises?
No, well,
did
like
you exercise a reconnaissance role?
Yeah, but I mean, say sometimes you took umpires, officers that were umpires to manoeuvres, you know. So you carried them, and like you went with the whatever section they were detailed to look for, or stay with, and you just kept with them. So while they done their manoeuvres, you just carted the officer about, and he just radioed, "So and so has been wiped out," or so and so," you know. His opinion.
What? But didn't you practice your reconnaissance role at all on exercises?
Well, no, not in that fact, because there wasn't no need for it. They knew that you knew what you had to do. So I mean, so there was no attacking and no stuff coming up that you would have to do it. You see what I mean?
So you didn't have to practice approaching the enemy and carrying out your role at all?
No, I was always the enemy.
Anything else about exercises?
No.
How long was it before you got the Bren gun carriers instead of the dingoes? Was that while he was still out there with them?
Yeah, they took them back for some reason. And we went to a station, took our dingoes, and then we got in six Bren gun carriers and got them back to camp driving those.
Now, what did you think of that? And come back? I mean,
they were terrible things to drive. I mean, especially in Germany where there's no pavements or stuff like that, because anything big came down and you dropped your track on the no road sign, it'll whip you right round into wherever the woody or whatever the field was. So you had to be very careful how you drove those type of things, you know.
They weren't as good then. Did they have any advantages?
Well, the only thing is they would carry more people. You know, if you had a call out or something and you had to go somewhere, you have six or seven people in the Bren gun carrier. But other than that, there was just mainly things that go about on sort of manoeuvres and stuff like that.
Now, what would you do for recreation when you're out in Germany? I mean, what would you do for fun? Was it sport or what was it?
Oh, yes, loads of sports. And
did you play much sport?
Yeah, I used to like netball, not netball, basketball, and what's it?
Volleyball?
Not volleyball. Well, I played volleyball. I used to like that in the boys' brigade. But I used to play. God damn it! Can't have anymore. On the diamond.
Baseball,
that's it. I can't think of the name. We had a good team.
So you played that. You didn't play football then?
Well, not really. Well, I played football, but not in the regimental team or anything like that.
And what about, so that's sport. What other recreations did you have? What did you do in the evening?
Well, mostly you went out down to town in Lunenburg.
What was a night out in Lunenburg?
They had a couple of naffy places down there, sort of thing. And you met people dancing. I had a dance or something like that, you know.
You still didn't drink much?
No. And yet, I was accused of being in charge of the vicious circle, the main NCOs that used to drink and call, until the RSF used to make my life misery because he always thought I was the leader. But it wasn't until I took him to a court martial once, and he had to be there. And then on the way back, he said, we'll stop because we hadn't had nothing to eat. We'll stop and have a dinner and that in a beer garden. And we had that, and he said, what are you having to drink? And I said, I don't drink. He said, you what? I said, I don't drink. I said, only unless it's a wedding or Christmas time. I said, but I don't drink. And he wouldn't believe me. And then we sat down at the dinner. And when we got back to camp, he was a different man.
Why did he thought you were the leader of this group of drinkers?
Well, I suppose it was because my attitude, as I said before, about couldn't care less about life. Because I would do stupid things, you know, things that a lot of people wouldn't volunteer to do or things like that. Because it never bothered me, you see.
How did you get on with the Germans?
Oh, I was all right with them. Because we had a load of engineers that used to maintain our tanks and vehicles. And I used to have to do a lot of stuff in there. And so I got to know a lot of them.
What sort of stuff did you have to do in there? You said you had to do a lot of stuff in there.
Well, like bring stuff in that they needed and stuff like that. Or take messages out or get stuff. So I got to know them. I've invited to two of them their weddings. So I got on well with them. You know, so it didn't bother me with them.
So it's pretty. Did everyone like the Germans, or because it's only five or six years after?
You know, some did. We had one of my best mates, a corporal, and he was always drunk on the weekends. And we used to go out, and I'd go somewhere, and he'd go in a beer garden or something. Another night, he used to come staggering in to the camp, and we used to say, how do you get back, you know? Because it was a long walk up the hill from the Lunenburg town up to the camp, to Lunenburg Heath. And it just kept coming, you know, every weekend the same thing, he'd come staggering in. So one weekend I thought, well, I've got to find out how he does it. And I went down and I thought, I've got out quick, there's the club, and I waited on this corner to watch where I knew he was coming. And he come out of this beer garden pub, and he got on the corner at the centre of the road, like what we got, keep left sides, but it was a different thing. And he'd be flopped on the thing in the middle, you know. And out of the club opposite, this blonde girl, beautiful girl, came out, and she got hold of him, his arm, and led him across the road and walked him all the way up to the camp and let him at the camp gates. So, Monday, I said to him, I said, do you know how you come back? He said, overnight. I said, how did you get back? So he said, well, something happened. I said, do you have any idea who brings you back? No, he's going on. So I said, well, next weekend, we're going to find out. So next weekend, I kept him with me. I wouldn't let him drink. And I set him on this centre thing, and this girl came. I said, pretend you're drunk. Then this girl came out. His hand up, his arm, got him across the road, walked up, and then I got halfway up and I came up behind him. I said, this is the young lady that's been helping you every night. every weekend. And she looked oh, a bit frightened. He looked sober. Anyway, he started to go out with her and he married her. He lived in Albion, but she was a lovely looking girl, beautiful girl.
And she was just helping him out of the goodness of her. Now, anything else about your time, and anything else you remember from your time in Germany?
Well, after that time, I was in the 7th Hussars, that was right. But then I got transferred from the 7th Hussars to the 5th Dragoon Guards.
Now, why was that?
Because they were going to go to Korea and they didn't want a made-up regiment. Now, they were made up by members of all different armoured regiments. They only had a hard core of their own regiment, like sort of officers and NCOs, but mainly for the crews and stuff and all that was all made up from other regiments. But the thing about that was, it was something happened the first time that I thought we've got a regiment. There was a fairground near Paderborn.
Sorry, hang on, that's where they were, was it?
Paderborn, yeah. There was this fair.
So it's the 5th, is it the Irish Dragoon Guards?
Yeah, 5th Royal Enniskillen Dragoon Guards, 5th DGs.
And you say that it was made up of drafts, but then the first time you felt they were a regiment. Tell me about that.
Well, what happened was there was this fairground, and some of the blokes went to the fairground, and they got beaten up in the toilets there by the Germans. And they came back to camp and they were in a very bad state. Now, there was nothing said in the regiment. Nobody said anything to anybody. But the next weekend, the old regiment, all the people that got together from different regiments, didn't know anybody because they were all new people from different regiments, turned up at this fairground and we smashed it up. Really went to town. There's no doubt about it. It was wrecked. It wasn't fit to be a fairground after that. Anyway, the weekend they called in the military police and all the other police and they put big barbed wire fence rolls all round the parade ground and they put us all on there. And the colonel, the regiment, got on a stool of that and stood up and he tried to lay the law down and what we done wrong. But I looked at his face and looked at him and he looked at everybody else and he thought to himself, you could see he was saying to himself, I think I've got a great regiment because they all stood together and we knew they couldn't do nothing because we were ready to go to Korea. So they couldn't put us all in prison or junk us at all. So they had to give us a big talking to, apologise to the Germans, and that was
done. Now, when did you join them? Do you know? When did you join them?
It must have been somewhere in 49.
Not 50?
No. Near 50. It must be late 49. Well, it must be late because, you know, the Horse of the Year show, that usually comes November time, doesn't it? Well, I and a couple of other blokes, we'd done the all the jumps in the Horse of the Year show for 2 weeks.
What do you mean you did them?
Well, we put them up and looked after the horses and arranged the usual the arena party.
But you were in Germany.
Yeah, but they no, we came from Germany to Aldershot once they got the regiment done. Yeah, you know, we were made up in Germany. The regiment was made up from all the regiments. Then we got shipped to Aldershot, ready to go to Korea.
Now, so tell me, just to finish, Dave, tell us about making up the jumps at the Horse of the Year show. What was that like?
Well, it was all right. You had to lay out the course and everything, and that, and then you had to call in the horses when it was their turn to come in from the ground outside to do the jumping and stuff like that. It was the first time the Queen, when she was a princess, and what it was there. And one of the jumps, a girl went over and landed on the jumps and broke her pelvis bone, came out of her stomach. And the horse went mad, and I ran across and got the horse, tried to catch the horse, and well, I eventually got the horse. But then at the end of the the do, when they, you'll get presented to the princess or whoever there, she looked at me, she said, "You've done a marvellous job catching that horse," she said. "Now is the young lady." I said, "Well, she's in hospital, but she's all right."